Hey there! Welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I am a former middle school teacher. I'm a current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And I think that is true whether you are face-to-face, whether you are blended, whether you're hybrid, distance, remote, you name it. And today we're going to be talking about how to make your virtual meetings, video conferences, whatever you want to call it, more interactive as you work in sort of a synchronous way with students. But before we get there, I want to tell you a little bit about a project I'm working on, which is I'm working on a book. It's on this topic of student-centered learning, student ownership, this whole idea of empowering students from a distance in those hybrid and remote learning environments. I'm super excited about it. I have finished the book. It's just a matter of, you know, going through some final copy editing. I'm going to be doing a lot of visuals for it, kind of the way I did with, you know, Empower and Vintage Innovation. So look for it in the, I guess, next month or so. Anyway, let's go ahead and get started. So video conferences or virtual meetings, whatever you want to call it, can be exhausting. You might notice that students who are highly engaged during an in-person session suddenly disengage in virtual meetings. Often there are challenges with video lag or simply the inability to read a room entirely. I created this goofy little visual about Zoom meetings based upon Hogwarts houses. And if you're not into Harry Potter, I apologize ahead of time. This might not make a lot of sense, but this has been kind of the types of people that I see. There's the Hufflepuffs, and they respond to video meetings by saying, "How's everyone feeling? OMG, we're gonna get through this together. We love each other. It's awesome. I miss you so much. Can I see your pets?" And then you have the Ravenclaws, and they say, "Let's get through this agenda ASAP so that we can finish grading while listening to a podcast. I have work to do. I want to be done." Then you have the Gryffindors, who are fidgeting the whole time, feeling stir crazy, and they just can't wait to get out. They're often completely silent. And then you have the Slytherin. The Slytherin misses the meeting entirely and lies about not getting the email invite or says that their, you know, computer crashed. But you get it. Video conferencing can present huge challenges. Without the built-in in-person accountability of a classroom and a teacher, it's easy, super easy to get distracted and to fail to attend virtual meetings. We see this all the time. Even when students do show up, virtual meetings can feel lonely. It can feel like you're talking underwater. That's the way I describe it, where there's this delay in communication and a sense of separation. And even though you can see each other, you're not really there together. When the microphones are all on mute, you can't hear any laughter. So all my dumb dad jokes are just out the window. I still do them, but they don't work. This is amplified by the sheer number of black screens from students who don't have the video turned on. Can you relate? Sometimes this is an issue of slow Wi-Fi connectivity. Other times students are shy or insecure and might not feel comfortable being visible. And still other times students might feel embarrassed or ashamed of their home environment. And it's important that we give students flexibility in this area. But virtual meetings can actually be a blast. A while ago, probably 2 months ago, I attended a highly interactive, dynamic fourth grade class meeting. Students engaged in Q&A, they met in small groups, they interviewed me as an author, Super Pizza, which is this book that I'd created about, well, a slice of pizza that becomes a superhero. Anyway, toward the end, each student participated in an interactive game of Kahoot, and everything was highly engaging. I would say there was as close to 100% participation as possible. And I think it's important because it was evidence that virtual meetings can work and that they can be highly interactive. That being said, not every student attended this meeting. There were actually a few students who just didn't show up at all. So even when it's well planned and things work out well, there's no guarantee that kids are always going to show up. Now, last week, I talked about the difference between synchronous and asynchronous learning. Quick review, Synchronous communication happens in real time, in the moment. Synchronous communication is often things like a video conference, a phone call. It's any type of communication where you're in the moment with the other person. It's essentially the type of communication that you would do in person, but you're doing it in a digital way instead. A walkie-talkie would fit into that description too. Synchronous tools and communication work really well if you're planning for something that's dynamic and interactive. But there are certain things where synchronous communication doesn't work. It has some definite limitations. The synchronous interactive nature of these communication tools makes it a challenge when students have unreliable internet or challenging schedules. It also tends to break down in effectiveness as groups grow larger. And for this reason, virtual learning is not a great method for direct instruction or for processing new information. It's also less effective in situations where you want to keep a permanent record of communication. Asynchronous communication does not happen in real time. Instead, it can happen over a longer period of time. And asynchronous communication might be pre-recorded videos and audio message and email. You get the idea. But it's also things like podcasts, like this is asynchronous right now, videos, articles, and books. Pretty much all online course materials are asynchronous because of the ease of ability to read, view, listen at one's own pace. It's pretty awesome. There's a time and a place for asynchronous. In fact, I would say in most of my online and virtual classes, the majority of what happens is asynchronous with some key moments where we meet together synchronously. So you get the idea. That's the key difference. So as we think about how to maximize the effectiveness of virtual meetings, it helps to ask, what are the key advantages of synchronous communication? In general, this includes dynamic, interactive communication and the ability to create shared experiences together. That's really where you get the most value from it. This is why virtual meetings don't work well for direct instruction. If you're planning to introduce new concepts for students, your best bet would be actually to create an asynchronous video that they can watch and rewatch again later. Instead, have the students watch it on their own and then clarify misconceptions and take a deeper dive into, you know, the ideas during a virtual meeting. In terms of discussions, virtual meetings don't work well for large class discussions. While it's feasible to have 20 students engaged in a free-flowing Socratic seminar in person, the lack of physical space and body language makes these discussions really hard to pull off in a virtual meeting. You've probably witnessed the challenge of a slight video lag when someone says, you first, no, you first, no, you first, in an ongoing loop. If you're opting for a discussion, I think it works best to use breakout rooms and breakout functions instead, or to just do a asynchronous, you know, discussion board or forum or social media chat, something like that instead. Virtual meetings don't tend to work well for class presentations either. Often there are logistical challenges with having students share screens, and there are quality issues if students want to embed things like video clips. Instead, it works best to have students craft videos that combine annotated or recorded slideshows, and then maybe some talking head style videos with some clips and visuals. Students can then watch their classmates' slideshows asynchronously and provide feedback on their own. And this allows students to edit and refine their presentation. And it really helps kids who are nervous, who are more introverted, things like that, have that chance to have more, I guess, rehearsal in this process of video composition. A really good general question to ask yourself is, could this video chat be a recorded video instead? And if the answer is yes, then a pre-recorded video is probably a better option. But if what you're trying to do is something that is interactive, if you want to interact with the information, if you want students to discuss it, if you want it to be dynamic, if you want to be, you know, making decisions together, then in those moments, a video conference is great. So the key thing is, we want our video conferences or virtual meetings, whatever you want to call them, to be highly interactive. So how do we make our virtual meetings more interactive? Well, here are a few different ideas. First idea is social-emotional check-ins. Begin your class with a quick social-emotional check-in to see how students are doing. When the quarantine began, I used the following prompt, and it was this idea of quarantine band name. And it was goofy, it was ridiculous, it was silly, but it worked. You basically chose the color of the sweatpants you were wearing and how you were feeling, and then, what food you had been eating way too fast or too much of during the quarantine. And it was goofy, it was silly, but it allowed us to interact in a way where we were actually saying, this is how I'm doing right now, this is how I'm feeling. Students shared their band names in the chat feature, and again, it was highly interactive. Another time, I asked them to sketch a high-low for the week with a quick description, and then they shared their pictures in small groups during the breakout rooms. So they basically had to draw what was their high for the week, what was their low for the week, and then they talked about it in these, you know, smaller group using the breakout rooms. Another thing that makes it more interactive is to incorporate movement. I know of a third grade teacher that does a daily dance to start her video conferences. This not only gets the blood flowing, but it also creates a shared experience. Other teachers have had a class phrase or mantra or a long distance high five that they do. And all of these things increase participation and help build community. And I think that's going to be really important if you're needing to create a classroom culture and build a community at the beginning of the year, which is something we're all going to be experiencing. The next idea is to use the Q&A feature. Many video conferences have both a chat feature and a Q&A feature. The Q&A feature is a great way to create sort of a parking lot where students can ask questions at any time, and you as the instructor can check it out when the time is right and answer those questions in a really interactive way. Now, if that's not possible, you just have them email you, or you could have a Google form that they can access at any time and submit it that way. So you can kind of hack it if you need to. Fourth idea is to use polls. Some video conference platforms include a built-in poll function. Most of them do not have that though. And I think that's kind of too bad because I think it would really work. I love using polls because of the instant feedback that that you get as a teacher. There's also the ability to review information, gather opinions, and it can be sort of a low-stakes icebreaker. I've said this before, but I am an introvert, so I don't enjoy icebreakers. I don't want to break the ice. I'd rather it melt slowly over days or weeks or, you know, years. But this is a pretty low-stakes way of doing an icebreaker, is doing a poll. Allow students to show off their pets. That's another idea. If they don't have a pet, they can share a stuffed animal. Obviously, when I say stuffed animal, I'm thinking a stuffy from a store, not something that's been taxidermied. Or a houseplant. I did this with a recent class, and a college student held out a cactus that he named Spike, and it was a fun little laugh that we had. Another idea is to use the chat function. It can be hard to navigate a large in-person discussion. However, the chat function can allow students to share their thoughts in real time. They can also send private chats to other classmates for a really quick pair share or a quick discussion. Next idea is to use hand gestures. Find specific hand gestures to get students moving. We've all heard of the four corners activity, right, where you move to different corners. You do the same thing except on the screen. Put your hand on the top left, top right, bottom left, bottom right, you know, and it becomes sort of a four corners activity. Same thing with a belief walk. They can walk back and forth across the room, except instead of walking across the room, they maybe put their hand across the screen. There's a lot of different ways that you can do it. You might also use total physical response or a TPR for content vocabulary. This is just a really good ELL or ESOL strategy to begin with, and it can help solidify the knowledge by building an association between a word, a definition, and a movement. I love using TPRs. I use them in the higher ed level, and I used them back when I taught sixth grade, seventh grade, and eighth grade. So I'm a huge fan. They're kind of made for younger grades, but they work because they make the thinking visible. The next idea is to include silence. Video conferences can still have moments for think time or for quick writes or for sketches. Simply add a timer and put everybody on mute and ask all participants to create the silence necessary to process information. This benefits introverts who need personal think time to make sense out of ideas, and it can also help students who are learning English to process the language at their own pace. So I love this idea of giving that additional processing time. Next idea is to integrate with other platforms. This is the idea that you are on your virtual chat, you are in your video conference, but you're also using a shared document like a Google Doc. You could have virtual sticky notes like Padlets. A virtual meeting doesn't have to be locked into specific video conference platforms. I really love the idea of having students going into other platforms while they're also in a video chat. I've alluded to this one, but it's the next idea. It's to use breakout rooms. Many video conferences offer breakout rooms for small group discussions. I know Google Meets does this. Zoom has done this for a long time. And as the instructor, you can typically set these ahead of time, and it allows things to stay highly interactive. It allows students to wrestle with concepts in small groups. And I know some people say, well, what happens if students goof off when they're in those small groups? What happens if they're being, social? And I would say maybe they need to be social, right? Like maybe that's part of what needs to happen too. Maybe that's not such a loss if they're not talking about, onomatopoeia in a small group. Maybe just being social is okay. And maybe that's part of facilitating a community. Next idea is to use hands-on learning to take things off screen. And this is similar to the idea of having movement, but this is the idea of doing a maker project or a scavenger hunt, or you might have students do sketch notes by hands. You're basically saying, we are going to use the video chat. We are going to have a synchronous meeting, but you're gonna leave the screen and you're gonna be off screen during this time. And I think that's important just because you're together doesn't mean you have to be glued to the screen, right? You can be interacting off screen as well. With that said, I just want to point out that teachers often face huge challenges in virtual meetings. This is especially true in schools where districts are requiring teachers to live stream lessons or to do hybrid learning where students joining for the whole day via video chat. It's a challenge. I get that. For what it's worth, neither of those two approaches of being, in a virtual chat all day, neither of those are what I would consider sound instructional design for virtual or hybrid learning. It's just not what works best. And often it's the result of political or community pressure. And I get it. It's hard. But as educators, we don't always have control over the context. So if we are teaching virtually, what we can at least do is choose to be intentional about increasing student interaction in our virtual meetings. And I think as a result, what that does is it helps build a more cohesive classroom community. Hey, thank you so much for listening to the show. Would you do me a favor? Would you leave a review on Apple Podcast or Stitcher or wherever you get this podcast? I would really appreciate that. Again, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.